Hello, and welcome to another Meta Media production of JW on Purpose with your host, JW Najarian, as he interviews and discusses business, finance, self-development, and lifestyle. Hello, everybody. This is JW Najarian, and I'm here today with Sharon Lecter. Hello, Sharon.
Hello, JW. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and how are you today?
Fantastic.
Thank you. Listen, thank you for coming on. I know you're very busy, and I really appreciate you coming and spending a little time with us today. For everybody who doesn't know Sharon, the most famous thing I know you for, and I think many people know you for, is that you co-authored the book with Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, also Cashflow Quadrant. And I think that was, I don't know if that was one of the first books you did, but it was the start of a long list of books that you've done. In fact, I just checked Amazon today. I think you have 148 different book entries.
Well, that makes me that makes me tired just hearing it. Yes, we did 15 books together in the Rich Dad series, and the two you mentioned were number one and two. So.
Yeah, not bad. I understood they're on the bestseller list for quite some time.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think, was one of the longest-selling bestsellers on the New York Times list. I think we hit almost, if not exceeded, close to 7 years. So, yeah, it was quite a testament, you know, and it was a testament not to us, but to people like yourself who read the book, found value, did something positive in their own lives and others, and then shared it. When I talk to people about Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I always ask them, well, how did you hear about it? And invariably it was my friend, my mother, my father, my son. So people shared the information with each other, and that's really so special and so rewarding to know that people found value in their own lives and then wanted to help others as well.
Yeah, and as I share with you before we started the call here, your book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was one of those paradigm changers for me. The information in there. Actually, I was upset with you. Let's be honest. I was upset with you when I first read the book, and I'll tell you why. Because I read it at 40. Because I think you wrote it just over 10 years ago, maybe.
It was 97. Mm-hmm.
97. Okay, so 15 years ago, or a little less than that. Anyway, mm-hmm. When I read it, I all I could say to myself is, why didn't I have this book at 20?
We heard that from a lot of people, absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, we still have 20-year-olds today that don't have the benefit of the information. And so that's my continuing to be my passion and my mission is to get the information to people at every age so that they can take control of their financial lives.
And but I really 40, want to get into it. I want to get into that a little more because I know that you work with children in financial literacy and young adults, and I really want to talk about that more because you do such great work there. But I wanted to let people know that you didn't just write that book. First of all, you're a mother and you're a CPA. You have a regular life. But you also wrote a bestseller that was on the list for 7 years. You've been out, you were appointed by the National CPA Financial Literacy Commission as a national spokesperson. You served under on the Literacy Council. What is it? The Financial Literacy Council. You served two presidents doing that, advising them on the need for financial literacy. I know you as an author, obviously. I know you're an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, an educator, international speaker, and all the whole lot. Like you were saying, you do a lot of work. I think you have something called Thrive Time. I've seen the books on Amazon, Thrive Time, and this is something that you do for teens?
Yes, we have a financial board game called Thrive Time for teens. We've actually just now finished, and we're at the end of our beta test on the adult version. And then we have an audio coaching product that's available through Amazon and called Thrive Time. So it's really, the bottom line for me is everything that you've just said is very complimentary and appreciated. But at the end of the day, I'm a mother and a grandmother and really am concerned about the future that we are leaving our kids. And so many people today are struggling financially. People that were well off 2 years ago are upside down today.
Okay.
And if we don't start providing information and providing assistance so people can find what they need that's affordable, not $5,000 coaching program, but something affordable that people can absolutely find hope and find action steps that they can take. Because once you do one thing to help your financials, one thing that you do to improve your life, it helps your self-confidence and it makes the second step easier.
Right. And you originally had a game called Cash Flow. Is this Thrive Time very much like that, teaching people how money really works?
Cash Flow is the game that we started at the Rich Dad Company, and we had Cash Flow, and we had Cash Flow for Kids and Cash Flow 202. Very good games, very good instructional games related to financial statements and introducing the rat race. But they didn't talk specifically to young people, and that has always been my passion. That's how in 1992 I dedicated my life, well before Rich Dad started, to really making sure that young people get started off right. And so Thrive Time for teens is not at all like Cash Flow, but it is basically teach. It's like a reality game instead of a reality television show. It's a reality game. It teaches young people that it's so important not only how they spend their money, but equally important how they spend their time. You know, we can see young people today, they get out of school and the unemployment rate the highest it's ever been, and they're frustrated. They can't find jobs. And so we want to give them the tools that they can understand before they get into debt, that they understand what happens. And so we made it, it's very humorous. We have a lot of humor in the game, and we won all kinds of awards on the Thrive Time for Teens game. But the best award I get is when young people play it and I see the lights turn on. JW, it really is, it's such a gift to me to see the reaction, because it really was the culmination of my life, my life's work, and bringing in the best of the best to find out what are the nuggets of information that not only will make a difference in young people's lives, but will get them intrigued and wanting to learn and wanting to participate in taking an active role in their own lives.
What's the biggest takeaway you think that kids get? Is it learning about credit or...
I think it gives them the biggest takeaway is that their eyes are open to the real world. They get a little bit more information about the economic world around them and the things that can impact them in a positive way, things that can impact them in a negative way. Charity is a really big part of the game, and through by giving, certain things in the game are going to happen to you that may not be money related, but they can be benefit related. So you might find a new partner, or you might find a new opportunity because you were giving, because you were at a charity function. So it kind of makes them aware of maybe those kinds of things have additional benefits than just being a good person, that you really have an opportunity to expand your network. And I think if nothing else, and allows young people to understand the consequences of the decisions they make are their own, and that they can decide their own future. Because so many of us have been raised, and so many kids today have a victim mentality.
Well, and that's what we're going to talk about as we go on here, and that is about choice, and one of the most important things that we have as humans.
It is for each and every one of us. And it's like we may not be able to change what happened to us yesterday or last week, but we can change what we're going to do tonight and every day in the future.
Okay, so some of the books you've written books with Trump and and many different financial gurus and financial experts. You have 20 or so books out there. A lot of them are based on not just success, but specific financial, entrepreneur, and investor-type scenarios, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so a lot of people know me for my interviews. A lot of people know me for my interviews about the finances because I run a very large commercial real estate investor group. One of the questions I have for you, since you've been in the trenches, you've been out there, you see what's going on. I'd like to hear your take on where the economy is and where do you think it's going right now.
Well, that's a great question. A lot of people talk about that we're in, is there going to be a double dip? Are we in a recession? Are we in a depression?
Right.
And what I really say is we actually are in a reset. Things, you cannot necessarily determine what's going to happen tomorrow based on history. You know, a lot of people say, well, history repeats itself. Well, I do agree that markets go up and markets go down. That's about the only thing that history is going to repeat itself.
Right.
The issue for people today is to understand that you and I may not be able to control what's happening on the international economy.
Right.
You and I may not be able to control what's happening in our state economy. But you and I can control what's happening in our own wallets. And it's a real simple concept. Spend less than you earn. If we can start doing that at home, then we can impact our own lives. And then by impacting our own lives, other people will see it and emulate us, and we will eventually be able to turn the economy around. And, for instance, in your business, in commercial real estate, you know, people are always going to need offices. Are we overbuilt? Yes. Do we have to start going back to the fundamentals? Same thing for real estate. Many people are upside down and have lost their homes, but they still need a place to live. So you may have an opportunity to get a rental property and help someone who needs the help and at the same time provide a revenue stream for yourself and your family and be able to take care of the tax benefits. But what happens is you say you want to buy low and sell high, but what happens when you get into an emotional market is the inverse. People buy high and sell low.
Exactly. Yeah,
it comes from fear. It comes from the fear of the unknown, the lack of education. And so by listening to programs like yours, JW, people start understanding the volatility. They start educating themselves. And by just educating yourself, you start dealing with the fear.
Absolutely. And there's so much fear going around, lack-mindedness and fear, and the markets are going crazy, and you can't, you know, they don't seem to follow fundamentals anymore. And I think the advice that you just gave is key to us getting back on track. Jobs, all the jobs programs that the government puts out, and if we're going to wait for the government to fix this or the corporations to fix this, it's not going to happen. You got to get your home in order first.
That's how we got out of the Great Depression. If you
right.
think about Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, it came out in 1937. And many
right.
people credit their successes today to having read that book because it gave you the tenets of success. And it's not waiting for your government or your employer to take care of you. It's being accountable, being resourceful, and adding value. The most successful businesses do one of two things. They solve a problem or serve a need.
Right.
And certainly today, there are a lot of problems and there's a lot of needs out there. So this is absolutely the best time to start thinking about starting a business.
Well, and it sounds so counterintuitive to hear you say that, doesn't it? When we watch the news or CNBC or whatever.
And what's wonderful about starting a business today is because of the Internet, it's not as costly as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the opportunity to create something that gives you a benefit. If you're an employee, great. Don't quit your job, but start something on the side. You know,
mm-hmm.
right now people are in a lot of pain. And what I say is, okay, admit that you have pain, but let's make a commitment. Short-term pain, long-term gain. And that short-term pain, just add to it a little bit. Use a few hours to start a business on the side and scrape it together so that you can start seeing revenue come in so that you have a business. A business is an asset. When you're an employee, you're your only asset. If you don't get out of bed, you don't get paid.
Exactly. And this is what Rich Dad, Poor Dad was about, and of course explained even deeper in Cashflow Quadrant. So a lot of people started learning about the fact that 9 to 5 was not going to necessarily get them for their financial freedom. And I really don't want to dog anybody who wants to go the 9 to 5 life. That's a choice that you make. But I think we can all figure out that we're not going to get we're not necessarily going to get to the place we want to be if we stick to that particular script.
And what you just said is important. There are people that choose that life, and that's great. That's wonderful. Enjoy that life and accept the fact that, you're limited to amount of time that you can work, and typically you're getting paid by the hour or on a percentage of transactions. So you know, the amount of money that you can make is finite. There's only so many hours in a day, so many days in the week. If you can create assets, whether it be real estate, whether it be stocks and bonds, whether it be starting a business, those assets can start generating revenue for you, and your assets can provide you unlimited amounts of income because they're not limited to time of your spending in the day.
And one of the good things, I probably should have segued over to Napoleon Hill at the when you mentioned him, but I'm going to take one more second to talk about the youth and what you provided by writing some of the books you've written. And that is, I'm at 52, for me to start saving my way to success is very tough because I'd have to save 50% of everything I made. And starting a business late, though not. I started my businesses late, and they're doing okay. So time is not an issue, but it's still a little harder to do that than it would be if you were young, and you started putting back your 10%, and you started understanding how compounding works and how you can build that nest egg that you can live off of.
It is. I mean, the earlier you start, the better. But unfortunately, the younger you are, the less inclined you are, because you think I can always start tomorrow, and does tomorrow ever come? But the other side of that coin, JW, is that there are so many people who thought they had their savings in line, they thought they had their retirement, and all of a sudden, in the markets of the last couple of years, they've seen those savings and those retirement funds disappear, and so people who had planned to retire now see that they're going to have to work another 5-10 years. And they're very concerned, they're very disenfranchised, they're very depressed, and they're very fearful. Mm-hmm. And those, you know, so we have both sets of individuals out there that are paralyzed in fear. And that's why, and this segue to Napoleon Hill, but Outwitting the Devil, my most recent book, it talks about that fear. So many of us deal in fear, and we don't realize it. And when we make decisions in fear, we are insular. We're not making decisions that add value to our lives. We're making decisions out of fear, and we are closing our minds to possibilities. And so we have to deal with that fear first. And it's so important today because, I mean, I don't know a single person who has not been impacted by what's been going on in the economy.
Oh, no, it's impossible.
And so people are fearful, and you see it. You see people, they're getting negative. When you're fearful, you invite negativity. And so you have to start saying, okay, what can I do? What action can I take to start positive way?
So you just mentioned Outwitting the Devil, and that's why I really wanted to talk to you today. I mean, I wanted to talk to you anyway, but you came out with this new book, and I happened to see you speak at a conference, and you mentioned the book. And, of course, I was intrigued. It's a book or a manuscript that Napoleon Hill wrote over 70 years ago, maybe a year after he wrote Think and Grow Rich.
That's correct.
Never been released. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I'm going to kind of go back a little bit before I get into the story. How are you connected to Napoleon Hill Society?
Well, I built the Rich Dad organization, and was there for 10 years. And after 10 years, I decided to start my own company, Pay Your Family First. And I had met Don Green, who is the head of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, at certain book fairs, and we'd gotten to know each other and had been working with him on some of his international stuff. And as soon as he realized that I had left Rich Dad, he called me and asked me to step into a project, which was 3 Feet from Gold, and support Greg Reed, who's my co-author on that, to get the book done. And so my first actual project in writing with the Napoleon Hill Foundation was 3 Feet from Gold, and it was great fun. It was very good for me at that point in time. And then right before we actually released it, Don called me and said, Sharon, I've got this manuscript that the foundation has just been given. It's been hidden away for 73 years. When it was written in 1938, it was very provocative. It takes on, you know, what Napoleon Hill did was, as you, I'm sure, are well aware, he spent his life studying success, and Think and Grow Rich is the thesis of his life's work. And mm-hmm. the power behind Think and Grow Rich and Outwitting the Devil is that it's not one man's opinion. It's not one guru's process. It is a synthesis of thousands of successful and people that had failures in their life. It's a synthesis of what the principles are to be successful. And so when he published it in 1937, he was troubled because he said, you know, even though people know what they're supposed to do, read this, they're going to have those self-limiting beliefs. They're going to have that fear of the unknown, that fear of criticism, and they're going to not create the success they deserve because of those fears. And so he sat down the very next year in 1938 and wrote Outwitting the Devil. And his wife was scared to death because she thought it was way too provocative. And so it literally was hidden for 73 years.
Now, in the foundation. When you say provocative, you know, people can go all kinds of different places. Are you talking spiritually? Are you talking sexually? Are you talking...
Almost all of the above. What happens in Outwitting the Devil, Napoleon Hill, if you think about 1938, that was during the time of Hitler, Mussolini. He takes on the elements of fear of his day, and every one of them is still with us today. He takes on religion, politics, sex, alcohol, cigarettes, education.
Right.
And about how every one of those areas can generate fear in our children's minds or in our minds as adults, and how that fear can cripple us. And so it really reveals those tools that we can each use to try and identify, expose, and eradicate the fear in our lives.
Yeah, I've just finished reading it. It's incredibly well done. And at first, let me just say, when I started reading it, I noticed that you did the annotations in the book. You didn't actually write the book. He wrote the book. You did annotations. And you wrote them really nicely so that they're between lines, and they're kind of secluded then from the writing so that you can read the whole book without your annotations, or you can read your annotations whenever you feel like it. And after going through it, at first I was kind of like, oh, you know, what do you need the annotations for? I can just go through. And then I found your annotations extremely helpful because you kept mentioning what was going on during the period. And it started to become almost like the story of Napoleon Hill.
Kind of like the behind the scenes. And that was all intentional because I wanted to make sure, I mean, this was an awesome honor. It was also an awesome responsibility.
Right.
Because Napoleon Hill himself couldn't say, yes, I like what you're saying, Sharon. You know, so out of honor to the man's reputation, to his incredible gift, I wanted to make sure that I did nothing but honor it. And so I worked very closely with the foundation to make sure my annotations were acceptable. But mm-hmm. I wanted them separate so that somebody that was a diehard Napoleon Hill fan could read it and skip over my annotations and not feel like I was interfering with Napoleon Hill. At the same time, just as you highlighted, JW, I wanted every once in a while when I was reading the book, at a certain point, I'd go, wow, he wrote this in 1938, and yet this is exactly what's going on today. And so in certain cases, when I write an annotation, it's to tie what was going on in 38 and how it relates to what's going on today.
It really actually helps set up the story and becomes two books in one, almost three books, because the annotations are helpful in a couple different ways. And one is to of course, relate the history that was going on at that time, but you also related parts of his life, which we may not have known about before. And you mentioned, I think, in the acknowledgement or the end of the book, where you talk about how he kind of failed forward. It's kind of like a book about him, his failures.
And it was, that's part of the beauty of the book, exactly what you just said, the very first several chapters. He takes you on a journey, and many of us think of him as this great author, this great philosopher, and yet this book shows that he was just a man like every one of us, and he had his deep, dark moments where he felt like a failure.
He failed quite a few times, actually. He was very successful, and then he failed, and he actually had a major breakdown during one of his failures. And he takes you all through that. It's pretty incredible.
And I think part of that process and that journey is so important because it endears you to him. It makes you realize that you get into his mind. And by getting into his mind, you start realizing that, gosh, I'm not the only one that has those fears. I'm not the only one that has those self-doubts, those self-limiting beliefs. Here is this man who created a life's work of changing the world, and yet he also had those moments of self-doubt. And then he shares how he got through it, how he blasted through those self-limiting beliefs and was able to grab hold of his life. And that was when his little epiphany that night, where he has an interrogation with the devil, and he lets you decide if it's the real devil or an imaginary devil. He's very good at how he communicates with the reader.
No, and, you know, it actually becomes genius how he decides to talk to the devil and use that as a way to, if you believe he's talking to the devil, you can do that. But if you just, it's a really good way, and I think he did it in Think and Grow Rich with a lot of the interviews he did, and that is by using the interview process, he can get through several points and hit both sides of them at the same time, which is very, very useful to you understanding the points that he's making.
That's right. He exposes the positive and the negative and then allows you to take the journey on realizing that those choices that you make are also impacting your life.
Yeah. And it's funny because he talks about the devil and God in the yin and the yang, the positive and the negative. One can't exist without the other. And then he did that with every one of his questions. It was just... I just thought it was a really, really well-done manuscript, and the way you pulled it together with your annotations just made it so enjoyable. And it's now another one of the paradigm-changing books in my life, mainly because it didn't shift my thinking as much as Rich Dad Poor Dad did. But what it did do, because I'd already read Think and Grow Rich, and I knew a lot of these concepts, but it cemented so many things that were in my head that I couldn't get out into words. It just, page after page after page, and I've gone through and reread sections over and over again, and every time got something more from it. I think it's just a genius piece of work, and I could see why you're honored to be a part of it.
Well, thank you, and it is. I mean, I'm so thrilled that you found value in it, and that's the stories that I get. I mean, I had a young woman come up to me at an event last week. She had long hair, and she obviously looked like she didn't really want to be there. She said to me, "My sister dragged me here tonight. I didn't want to come. Why do I want to listen to some dead guy?" You know. and then she had tears in her eyes, and she says, "I was supposed to be here." You know, she opened. She opened a page of the book, and there was a quote in the book that says, "We're all basically the decisions we make determine what our destiny is." And she says, "My sister's been trying to talk to me till she's blue in the face, and I don't pay any attention." She says, "But what you said tonight, talking about this book and talking about the issues that we are all where we are today based on the choices we've made," she says, "I was supposed to be here, and you turned my lights on."
Wow. It's got to be great hearing stuff like that.
Well, it's such an honor. And yet at the same time, it did the same thing for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm simply a messenger, you know, and so honored to be able to share this wisdom that came from Hill. And again, it wasn't, it was a synthesis of so many people, and I think that's the part that we really need to highlight. When people, you know, there are lots of wonderful books out there, wonderful people writing incredible books, but typically they are that person's opinion about something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference for Think and Grow Rich and Outwitting the Devil. These are the quintessential thesis works of a lifetime of study, and it's the synthesis of all the principles of success and all the principles of how to get past that fear. And he talks about the fear of poverty, the fear of criticism, the fear of death, the fear of old age, and how you can actually face it and understand where that fear is coming from. As I said, expose it and then get rid of it.
The other thing he's very high on, and that is drifting and being in hypnotic state, which at first I didn't get. I had to reread it quite a few times. But he actually put a whole chapter together just to explain it. And once I got it, it was like, oh my gosh, no duh. That's a literary term.
It is. I mean, that was the drifting and non-drifting was very powerful for me, and it's been repeated to me over and over again, and it's been powerful for others. And it's a simple concept. And you think, well, yeah, that's easy. But as you read him and as you read the way he describes it, it really does speak to your inner soul. I mean, we have all been drifters at points and times in our life. And a drifter is someone who's easily goes with the flow, easily swayed. They don't really have that definite purpose. They don't have that end goal. So they're kind of listless. They don't know what they want in life. And we've all been there. And then he talks about the non-drifter, who's somebody who has their definite purpose in mind. And even if they get off course a little, you may drift a little, but they know how to correct because they know where their ultimate purpose is. And so that's the person that the devil says he can't really mess with too much. But the drifter, the devil has his way with you. And if you talk about procrastination, this was one of the things that kind of hit me between the eyes, is procrastination is laziness plus indifference. And I always said, I work better under pressure. Well, mm-hmm. That was my excuse.
Right.
It was simply procrastination. And it's like, uh-oh, here I am, I'm exposed. But if you think about all of those things in each of our lives, it really does make you aware of the things that you may be doing in your life that's holding you back.
Absolutely. And you were talking earlier about the book being a little, you know, his wife not wanting to release it because it would, he ruffled people's feathers, and especially the church. He picked on when you read the book at first, he seems to pick on the church a lot. But I don't think he's really picking on the church, to me. I think he's talking about people who drift and people who don't make their own choices, and people
right. Well,
who
and certainly
want you
the
to
title.
Follow blindly without making
yeah,
without being able to make a choice.
Exactly, and the title itself makes you think that it has a knock on religion, but it's mm-hmm. really not. Religion that he's knocking. He's knocking the delivery of religious education, same as our public education. And so I was raised in the Southern Baptist Church. And this really...
A lot of fear, right?
It really resonated with me because I still today can remember one of my ministers who scared me to death. I was damned and I was going to go to hell. There's no doubt about it based on what this minister said to me. But in the same church... In the same religion, I also had a minister that made me feel, lifted me up in my faith and gave me the ability to believe in myself that I could do and be anything I wanted to be.
Mm.
And yet, when I think about my life, that's the minister that gave me hope, gave me motivation to succeed, versus the one who taught me through fear, who made me feel inferior, made me feel like I had, why even bother trying? So
right.
It is, again, a contrast between fear and faith is the difference between failure and success.
And he's very clear on, let's see, if we can go talk about the secret for a second. He's very clear on the fact that action has to be there. You just can't, you can't leave it up to the universe to take care of it for you. You have to put action behind those.
Yes, and he actually wrote about the law of attraction back in 1919. And
right.
Rhonda Byrne's work is fabulous. The Secret, the book, the movie is great. But it is something that you have to have action. You know, we can't just sit and think positive thoughts and have positive things happen. God gave us all arms and legs and minds. And so Napoleon Hill talks about going the extra mile, putting in the extra effort, making the plan. So, yes, he's very much into the fact that you do want to surround yourself with positive people. You do want to have positive thoughts and positive energy and get rid of the negative, run away from negative people. But
right.
Above everything else, you need to take responsibility and take action.
Let me talk about, because if you put the book into a nutshell, your last chapter kind of really does that, and that's the seven steps to outwit the devil. I've seen so much stuff. I've gone to seminar after seminar. I'm kind of a seminar junkie, and these were they're not profound as much as he hit that. Those seven steps are perfect. I mean, I couldn't think of anything else to put in there. I might be off my rocker, but I just thought that every one of those things hit the mark.
And it is exactly what you just said. Alone, each of those steps is not extraordinary. Together, and understanding the interrelationship between each of those actions is what's profound.
Well, let me ask you this, because there are seven of these principles. He wrote a book on 17 principles of success. How are these different?
Mm-hmm. Okay, the principles of success, the 17 principles of success, which were distilled down to 13 in Think and Grow Rich, are all related to dissecting the world around you and positive action and things that you need to do related to creating success in your life, okay? These mm-hmm. seven steps to outwitting the devil are those things internally that you need to do to preserve your spirit, to be able to protect yourself from the negativity in the world. And this is the internal food that you need to do in your body to prevent negativity from keeping you from employing those 13 steps, from employing those 17 steps. And in both the 7 steps, the 13 steps, and the 17 steps, the number one issue in all of them is definiteness of purpose. And so, but again, this is your attitude. So actions and attitude.
Well, without definition, definite, I read somewhere that without purpose, our bodies just don't even want to function. Probably one of the largest causes of death is no definite purpose in life. And I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying, if you have no purpose, there's really no reason to get up in the morning anymore.
Well, you hear story and story of people who retire and they die within a couple of years. Or someone whose spouse dies and they die within a couple of years after. And part of that is, you know, what's getting you out of bed in the morning? What are you going to do? I mean, when I grew up as a little kid, my father at night would say, Sharon, have you added value to somebody's life today? You know, and it may be your purpose can be as simple as that, that every day you reach out and touch someone, you reach out and you add value to somebody's life, and that gives you the purpose and the energy to get out of bed. You know, not everybody needs to, create world peace. You know,
right.
Your purpose in life can be very, very personal to you.
So what do you think of it when you always hear you have to do what you're passionate about in life? And a lot of people that are working day to day, and maybe not the job they're totally passionate in, but it's paying their bills. What do you say to those people who, I've talked to a lot of people who say, I keep hearing this, I got to live my passion, and I don't even know what it is. How do I find my purpose and my passion? How do you get there?
Well, I think that is a very important issue today, because many people who had passions lost their passion with what's happened in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Passion. And this actually was a revelation to me in working for 3 Feet from Gold, because, you know, we've all heard, we've all gone to the seminars, we've read Passion, Do What You Love, Love What You Do.
Right.
But one of the things, I sat back and said, you know, wait a minute, my passion actually came from anger. I was upset when my son got into credit card debt. I was upset that they weren't teaching kids about money in school. I was upset that I thought I had taught my son about money, but I hadn't taught him about credit cards.
Right.
He was with me when I used them, but he wasn't with me when I paid them off every month, and I figured by osmosis he would just pay them off every month. And so it was in 1992 when he went off to college and got into credit card debt and came home and asked us to bail him out, and we said no. That's where my passion came from. And that passion is as strong today as it was in 1992. But my passion is coming from my anger. And so when you're talking about passion, and this is something we created the personal success equation in the book 3 Feet from Gold.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, take your passion, combine it with your talent. Now, again, my passion as a parent was combined with my talent as a CPA and in writing. I've been in publishing. Find the right association. So when people haven't found their passion yet, maybe they need to change their associations, and maybe it'll help them identify their passion. And take the right action. So again, the formula is passion plus talent with the right association, taking the right action, but above all, having faith in yourself and what you want to do. And so that passion, if you can't lead with the passion, you might be able to back up into it.
Sharon, what if you enjoy many things? I have many passions. I find it sometimes hard to find out exactly which passion is the one I should follow.
I think there's more people like you than not. And we actually take you through that exercise in a workbook at the end of 3 Feet from Gold, where we say, you know, sit down and listen. You know, you may have 10 passions. Write them all down. And then do the exercise of writing down all your talents. And you may be frustrated, but then sit down with somebody who knows you well, several people independently of each other, and say, you know, get their thoughts on your passion and your talents. And they may actually help you identify things that you didn't identify in yourself.
That's huge. You're right. That is a big one. I've seen that happen over and over again. Back to Outwitting the Devil. It's a book that just came out. When did it get published? Just recently, correct?
In June. Mm-hmm.
In June. So it's been out just a very short time. And we
can
find it, I'm guessing, on Amazon and all the standard places?
Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and Barnes & Noble stores, Books A Million. You can also go to OutwittingTheDevil.com. It's a special website we have set up. And through that website, you can link to either Amazon or Barnes & Noble to order the book. But there's also a secret chapter on that website. And OutwittingTheDevil.com, there's a secret that did not make it. It was in the original manuscript, but it didn't make it into the printed book because it's a kind of a standalone short story. It's completely different than what's in Outwitting the Devil. But it's Hill having a discussion with his mastermind, his imaginary council. And so he goes back and he pulls in stuff from Plato and stuff from Edison and stuff from Roosevelt. But it's a very entertaining secret chapter that we pulled out to give away for free. And that's at the website and available for download on outwittingthedevil.com.
Well, thank you for telling us about that. That actually brings up a question that I had that I hadn't asked of you, and that is, when you went over the manuscript, did you put out the manuscript exactly as he had put it out? Because he had a lot of written notes in there and all kinds of stuff. Also, I thought I heard you say that there were some parts in there that didn't translate because of the time, that there might have been some changes done. Is that correct?
What you read in the book, Outwitting the Devil, his sections, I have not changed.
Okay.
So his sections are as he wrote them.
Perfect.
There were some sections in the book, like the secret chapter that we pulled out. As if you know Napoleon Hill, he was quite prolific. So, you know, the book was quite lengthy, and so I synthesized by what I call precision editing. Certain sections were pulled out that really didn't relate to today's world, that didn't really add the value and the impact that I felt that the manuscript could be. And yet it didn't take away from the message by not including it.
So everything is word for word.
Everything is word for word in his sections of the manuscript. That's correct.
That's great. By the way, also at the end, there's a small section that was done by Michael Beckwith, and very, very good choice. He had some great things to say.
Oh, I love his line. This is a renaissance. This book can create a renaissance in consciousness. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what we need. We need a renaissance in consciousness. We need to get rid of the fear. We need to all start lifting each other up and adding value to the world and helping each other. By helping each other, we help ourselves.
Well, this is the one of the books to do it. As soon as me and my wife read it, we ended up buying a bunch of copies, just like we did with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, by the way. We have a whole pile of books, and we give them away non-sparingly to people, our friends and family.
Love it. Thank you so much. And that's it is such an important book for today. I mean, I just over and over again, I get emails and calls and people just saying, this has changed my life around. And I say, wait, you've changed your life. This book just triggers you to look at it in a different frame. But the trigger to change is coming from within. I mean, you and I were talking about this earlier. It's so important. People have for years come up and said, you changed my life. And I say, stop. Own it. If your life has changed just because you read something, yes, and I'm honored that I had something to do with it. I'm thrilled to know that something I wrote impacted you. I said, but if you made a change in your life, you own it. You made that change. You took the action. So own it and celebrate your own ability to change your circumstances.
True. The brilliance is really in you. And,
each and every one of us, each and every one of us. And people, there's been such a diversion of victim mentality in our society. Young people, older people that have seen their state, you know, there's such of this woe me attitude, victim, it's everybody else's fault. And things have happened. And I'm not saying just be callous about it, but understand that you have the opportunity to say, okay, this happened. What am I going to do about it? Am I going to be miserable because this happened and therefore bring more misery to myself? Or am I going to say, okay, these are the cards I have today. How am I going to play it? Because it's my choice what I do, how I do it, and who I do it with from today forward.
It's just really just about taking control of your life. And if you want a better life, you can't leave it up to the universe to make sure that that happens. You really have to make the choices.
And it is, we are each CEOs. We are the CEO of our own life. We are the CEO of our own balance sheet and income statement. We need to be honest with ourselves about where we are today. We need to be honest with ourselves as to where we truly want to be and go, and realize what actions we need to take to get to where we want to go.
Well, Sharon, I thank you so much for taking time with us today. Let me ask you one more thing. I always like to give people a chance to mention their cause. Can I have you mention the cause that you're working with right now?
Certainly. Well, I'm in the midst of doing a lot of financial literacy programs, mm-hmm. where we are utilizing the Thrive Time Games, and while we're going into the individual schools and programs with young people to give them the tools to open their eyes to the world of money, open their eyes to the fact that they are in control of their own destiny. I was at a speech today. They were saying that based on the national debt, a child born today is born with a $45,000 debt on their head. Yeah, and that's a sobering number. we have to do something about it. And we have to take control. And we don't have to know everything. That's why we create the products that we do, so that you can share the information without feeling like you have to expose your own financial issues. But you can take these products and help kids that you love and adore, and help your neighbor's children if you don't have kids of your own. And these programs we do, a lot of it is pro bono. I go out and help these organizations. We find funding. So if you are interested in supporting what we're doing, you can find us at payyourfamilyfirst.com. And we have a lot of nonprofit programs. We have a 501c3 organization so we accept donations to support those programs. 100% of anything that's contributed to our foundation is utilized in programming. There's no overhead. All of that I pay for independently.
Wow.
So you can come to payyourfamilyfirst.com and find out more information about our programs.
Well, again, Sharon, thank you for taking the time today to be with me. Thank you for all the wonderful books that I've enjoyed over the years and that you continue to put out. And thank you for your work with kids and women and just the time that you put in, because I know you're busy with family, too, and your life, just as we all are. So I really thank you so much for everything that you do. And I want everybody to go. I'm just going to go out on a limb right now and tell you that this is one of the most important interviews I've done in a while. I really believe that this book is a game changer. It is something that we all should read because it just the message is just so important in for today and for the rest of your life. And so, again, thank you, Sharon.
Well, I want to acknowledge you, JW, and I appreciate you bringing this to your group and to your community and for the wisdom that you share with them, because it shows your desire to make the world a better place. And I absolutely love the term game changer. I appreciate you reading the book and your sentiments and sharing it with others, because it was a huge impact on my life, and I know it will on your listeners. Just get the book. Give it to someone that you know stuck, that feels frustrated, they don't know what they're doing. This might be something that's going to help them wake up and start charting a better course.
Oh, and this makes a great gift to a struggling family member or your children. It's Outwitting the Devil, and it's by Napoleon Hill and Sharon Lecter. And thanks again, Sharon. Wishing all my listeners a great day and a great week and a great year. Go out and get the book, and we'll be back soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to JW on Purpose with JW Nigerian. You can find JW on Purpose at jwonpurpose.com. JW on Purpose is the property and is a trademark of Meta Media Group, and this audio is copyright 2011, and all rights are reserved.